Who's the hunter from the future?
You're the hunter from the future.
No, I'm not. That's what I'm asking. Who is the hunter from the future?
Brian, you're the hunter from the future.
Okay, I feel like we're getting nowhere. All right, so you admit there is a hunter from the future.
Yes.
And he has a name.
Yes.
So who's the hunter from the future?
You're not getting this.
This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
Everybody, to another utterly fantastic episode of Junk Food Cinema here on FilmSchoolRejects.com. This is the weekly cult and exploitation filmcast that revisits the forgotten films from the distant past all the way to the post-apocalyptic future. I am your host, Brian Salisbury, once and future Burger King, and I am joined by my co-host, my co-pilot,
the abbot to your Costello.
The abbot to my Costello, clearly, if you listen to that opening, Mr. C. Robert Cargill.
Lieutenant.
I'm sorry.
C. Robert Cargill.
Lieutenant C. Robert Cargill of Megaforce. That's never going to change, people. That's going to be every episode. That is my life now. That's
your
my life.
Now. You are teamed up with a lieutenant of Megaforce.
Fair enough. So myself and the lieutenant of Megaforce over here would like to remind you that Junk Food Cinema is available on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. You can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/, you guessed it, Junkies, Junk Food Cinema. Well, we are continuing through Random Movie May, even though it's technically June. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Don't worry about it. But as this week's movie teaches us, time means nothing whatsoever. It means nothing, guys. And we did a favorite movie of mine last week with Escape from New York, so we're back to Mr. Cargill picking one of his favorites. And he picked a goddamn doozy this week.
Oh, yes, I did. I've been wanting to talk about
doozy.
This one forever. Look, again, like you were amazed last week that we hadn't covered Escape from New York.
Yes.
I am amazed that I have not pushed and fought and clawed at some point over the last year or so to do your Hunter from the Future.
His courage makes him master of a world in chaos. He is the warrior known as...
Look, I get mad when people make fundamental grammatical errors and don't even care enough to know that they're making these errors. So let me break it down for you. Y-O-U-R is the possessive form of you. Y-O-U apostrophe R-E is the contraction of you are. And Y-O-R is the motherfucking hunter from the future.
The hunter from the future.
Hike up your loincloths and grab your fire swords because we're traveling back and forward in time with your hunter from the future. Cargill, what the fuck is this movie?
Well, first of all, I knew you were going to be madly in love with this movie because it's Italian.
It's so Italian, it's directed by a guy named Antonio Margheriti.
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 What this is a brilliant piece of schlock from the very early 80s. That was, which was supposedly, and I say supposedly because no one's ever actually been able to find it, edited from an Italian miniseries.
And, yes, that
and
is correct.
It was supposedly an Italian miniseries that ran. There are rumors that it was 4 hours long. And what it was cut down to was a brisk 90 minutes that are just batshit insane. It is, and it's kind of awesome in how it works because it's got a three-act structure that the only movie I can really compare it to is Riddick, which came out recently, in that each act of this movie is a completely different genre and is a completely different type of movie.
Mm-hmm.
What it is, it's a movie that opens up with some prehistoric hunters hunting dinosaurs. And they get into trouble, and this dude, your hunter from the future, shows up to save their bacon. And one of those pieces of bacon happens to be a little piece of hotness of a cavewoman who he falls for and she falls for him. And at some point, it's just accepted that they are married and she is his wife. And then the second act of the movie is them leaving their valley and going on to find that there is so much more to this story than we thought, that this is not a caveman movie, this is not a prehistoric movie, that there's this other stuff going on, that it's almost like an epic fantasy in how it's done. It starts getting weirder and weirder. And then at the end of the second act, we discover that this is a post-apocalyptic film, that this is a film taking place long after humanity has nuked itself. And then the third act is pure science fiction.
So with the post-apocalyptic thing, there is actually a theme running between last week's Escape from New York and Your Hunter from the Future. You know, we'll talk about that when we discuss Yours' third act, but I wanted to point out that even in our attempt to do a totally random movie May, we accidentally wrapped the month with a themed pairing. That's my fault. Even when we try to be random and bad, we're bad at that.
Well, can we really get very far without talking about post-apocalyptic or dystopian films?
No, we really can't.
We really can't. Because really that's can't. kind of your and my sweet spot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, today's film, I think might not be on the same level as Escape from New York, because we talk about Escape from New York as being legitimately good, and a lot of auteur artists who are working on it, masters of their craft. Today's film would be considered a guilty pleasure to those cinephiles with Cargo, what's the thing called? Oh yeah, Shame. But Cargill and I have not this trait, so...
We lack shame.
We lack shame, and that's what I love. I love the fact that I can watch a movie like this and have so much fun, because there are things I legitimately do like about this movie.
Yeah, this is the thing about this movie, is that it is highly entertaining. I've watched it. I was fortunate enough nearly a decade and a half ago to see it on 35. It was projected for a Weird Wednesday. It was actually one of the films that Tim League had gotten in this big 200 film purchase that kicked off Weird Wednesday. How Weird Wednesday brought so many of us together here in Austin. And I talked about this very early on in our first episode, well over a year ago, was that, you know, Tim League was trying to collect together genre films and bought over 200 films from a drive-in theater that had closed down. And he needed to see if the films were any good. So he decided to run them on Wednesday night at midnight. It was a free entry for a long time. And then it became a dollar entry. And now I think with the escalation of prices, it is currently $3. But he would just run these films just to see if they worked, if he had all the reels, if the reels were in right. And you never knew what you were going to get, but you weren't paying for it. So it was like, fuck it. So all these people who watched weird shit and loved weird shit all got together and all became friends, forming what was an early group of critics here in Austin. And this was one of the films that showed. Now, I had seen it long before. This is one of my childhood favorites. I used to watch this when it played on HBO on a loop next to Beastmaster. And this is a film that is heavily flawed, is really goofy, but has legitimately great moments and some really cool shit going on.
HBO, you got Beastmaster and my Hunter from the Future. No, you got Hunter from the Future and my Beastmaster. Wah, wah, wah. You're our titular hero with the unfortunate name, is played by Reb Brown, filmdom's second worst Captain America. Sorry, Matt Salinger. Couldn't help it. And much like those late 70s Captain America films in which Reb Brown starred, as Cargill mentioned, Yor was supposedly pieced together from a four-part sci-fi miniseries on Italian television, which was itself based upon a graphic novel. I can actually believe that it was based on a TV miniseries, because you can see the TV structure here. I mean, it's got a Monster of the Week feel to its plot, and not in the way that it's like, oh, we encounter new creatures as we go along. It's more like an epic three-act structure to every act of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, for example, he wastes the first bad guy in his tribe of Quest for Fire extras in the first 20 minutes. And how does he defeat them, by the way? By the way, this, if you need to understand why this movie is incredible.
Are you talking about one of the greatest scenes in cinema history?
Yes.
I actually just trumped Joe Lynch with this about a week ago, because Joe Lynch was saying that this particular moment in this particular film is the greatest scene in cinema history. And I was like, is it better than this scene from Your Hunter for the Future? And he's like, touche, you fucker.
Imagine a giant bat dinosaur monster. And then imagine that our hero...
A pterodactyl, if you will.
A pterodactyl, if you will. All the pterodactyls. Our hero bludgeons it to death with a rock.
Well, first, they shoot it with an arrow, dropping it into the sky, then he bludgeons it to death with a rock.
He kills a lot of dinosaurs in this movie, including a triceratops, which I've never known to be a carnivorous dinosaur, but
This is a triceratops from the future.
From the future past. From the future past. And then
what does he do with this bludgeon thing? He uses it as a hang glider and hang glides in to jump on the villain and beat the shit out of things, then steering the body perfectly to crush several other of these ape men.
It made Trump Miles O'Keefe in Cave Dwellers, making an entire hang glider out of what I guess was coconuts. They never really show you what he builds it out of. No, this is like somebody took Rodan and went, you know what? I'm going to hang glide on this bitch.
And not only that, this is the first moment in the movie where we get something that happens only two or three times, but is truly epic when it does, is that the minute he starts hang gliding on this thing, his theme song kicks in.
Oh my
Yours
God.
Yours World, he's the man.
Yours World, he's the man.
We can pick on and apologize for a number of elements in this beloved junkie flick, but one thing that legit rules about Your Hunter from the Future is its killer theme song, and there's not a shred of irony in my voice, guys.
Oh my God, that theme song is so much fun.
Oh, that theme song. That fucking theme song. I'm so glad. I just played a little snippet of it. I want to listen to that all day. I want to find this soundtrack on vinyl. That's like my new mission.
Several years back, I downloaded it because you can't find it legitimately.
No.
And it wasn't available on eBay. And somebody had had ripped the original soundtrack and made it available for download, and I downloaded it and played Yours World pretty much on a loop, or whenever I would do something cool during the day in front of my wife, I would then play that song really quick, and my wife would just give me the dirtiest look. And she hadn't seen the film until this time, and when she watched it, she's like, okay, I get it. That theme song is pretty fucking badass.
I love that it took seeing the movie and having the context of paper mache dinosaurs and pterodactyl hang gliders,
which is
really
a mutual love that me and my wife share.
Paper mache dinosaurs?
Oh, God. Really cheesy, rubbery papier-mâché monsters? Oh, yes.
Yes.
Nothing makes my wife giggle more than a really crappily designed monster fighting a hero.
So as the movie opens, I'm going to try to describe what we're seeing as the movie opens. Try to really capture the magic of this establishing scene. A tribe of cave people hold their children up to the sky in tribute to the gods. And at first it was like, oh, this is going to get real dark. They're going to sacrifice these kids. No, they just put them right back down. So in essence, it's the world's creepiest version of the wave. And then Yor battles the terrifying papier-mâché monster. And then he becomes like accepted into the village. And then it immediately gets destroyed. So you have a very Conan-esque type situation here, where the village is destroyed and Yor runs off with the pretty girl who's been making eyes at him the whole time, and
her uncle.
Is it her uncle?
Yeah.
Okay. Because he just kept referring to her as, or she kept referring to him as like her caregiver.
It's her uncle.
I guess it's okay.
Her parents are dead, and her uncle is taking care of her.
She keeps asking about why. She keeps asking her uncle, why is Yor so different from other men? Yor is a big, sweaty barbarian that kills things. So As far as I can tell, the only thing that therefore separates him from the other men around her is that he's blonde and shirtless most of the time.
I think that's what she's talking about.
Is that what
about.
She's talking about?
Yeah, she's okay. talking about he looks different. He's much braver than everyone else. He's super awesome. Why is he different? Why is he different? Because he also, while he goes around killing things, he collects wives like some people collect t-shirts. Mm. Like, he just keeps getting offered wives everywhere he goes.
Yeah. And then, you know, after he kills the Quest for Fire guys with the pterodactyl hang glider, we're introduced to the next monster of the week, cave mummies. Cave mummies. And this is where the love triangle happens, because they rescue from the cave mummies a gorgeous blonde woman to then go along with his gorgeous brunette woman. And, you know,
Jealousy arises.
And there is an odd, very odd societal, like, moray exploration here. Because when Blondie Browse, who is the name, I don't know her actual character name because I was too focused on the fact that she was blonde and had these really big eyebrows. So Blondie Browse shows up halfway through, and then there is Surly Dancer, or Kala. She gets jealous, and her old guardian guy says, "Among our people, man can have many wives, so why can't your have two?" Which, in other words, is like, look, would you just get on board with the polyamory already? I mean, you're really holding this up here. And she, hold on.
Okay.
She retorts with, "That woman is of the same race as your and could take him away forever." So, understandably caveman-esque in its views on monogamy, but then oddly insistent upon interracial relationships. Strange. Yeah, strange is all I'm saying.
Yeah, and on top of that, what I love is that the old man constantly is giving us the laws of the thing. And the, you know, my favorite character moment in the film is when she's been taken, Kala's been taken, by the ape men. And, Yor's like, "I'm going to go get her." It's like, he's like, "No, in our people, the law is that what you take is yours." And Yor's like, "Well, I don't care about your law." And then they proceed to go and take her back. But then technically by law, it's legal because he took her back. He won her in combat. So, she becomes his now. And they keep going over these laws, and the laws are just terrible.
Yeah.
Like, there's just, it's like, what the fuck is up with your people? You have these laws, and, they're terrible laws. they're like beyond just prehistoric laws. They're just, it's your law is might makes right. You get as many women as you want and you can win them in combat. It's like, really? Okay. Well, that's not really much of a law, but all right. Whatever gets you through the night.
The laws are worse than prehistoric. They're Floridian. That's how bad the laws are. I mean, they're really
Florida man from the future.
I think most people in Florida are really from the past, if you look at the retirement communities down there. So Cargill, the burning question, of course, that all men must ask themselves, cave mummy woman or Kala? It's a classic blonde versus brunette decision here.
Yeah, cave mummy woman is sweeter, kind of hotter, has this back history with him and knows about, you know, these people kind of that they came from. But Kala's got a passion to her.
And she can dance.
She can also occasionally kick ass when she's not being saved constantly by Yor.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie, by the way, being both Italian and genre, is sexist as fuck.
Would you just get on board with the polyamory already? Come on,
it's
woman.
It's sexist as fuck. Like, the women just exist to get killed and to get into trouble, and Yor saves them, and they get offered as sex toys. Like, that is the whole thrust of the first two acts of the movie.
There's literally a scene where a guy, like, offers Yor what I assume is his, like, 12-year-old daughter, and is like, "Thanks for saving our village. Here's this woman that's yours now." And he finally is like, "No, I have a woman," which is hilarious to me because it's like, "I used to have two, but then one of them died. So now I'm really monogamous." And I'm like, just because one of them died.
You can only keep track of so many wives at once. And it's a dangerous world that Yor lives in.
What are you, a Mormon? You can't do it. It's illegal according to the laws that we've just made up on the spot all the time. The most, for me, by the way, it's Kala. Kala all the way, absolutely. But the most bizarre thing to me about Your Hunter from the Future is its title. Because the fact that it's the future, that the world in which this takes place is not the past, but actually long after a nuclear holocaust wiped out what we knew of the present, is supposed to be a surprise. Like, the way the movie's structured, it's supposed to be a surprise.
Yeah, and yet it still kind of is. I mean, the thing is that they hide the fact that it's a post-apocalyptic movie, but you know that yours different, and they're highlighting that he's different as a red herring, that you're sitting there going, oh, wait a second, Yor comes from somewhere else. And once we start hearing about flying machines and they're talking about forged metal and, you know, there's things that aren't quite, you know, congruous with prehistoric society, all of a sudden you're like, where did Yor come from? Did he come from another planet? You know, is he really a robot? I don't know what the fuck
Yor
is.
But you're talking about hints and nuance, which is hilarious that I use that word when talking about Yor Hunter Them Future.
But it's there.
But it's all absolutely betrayed by the fact that he is called, and the movie is called, Your Hunter from the Future. I mean,
You're acting like there was rationality in Schlockmeister.
But I mean, the one thing you want your movies to do is make money, and I feel like if you're... That would be like calling Planet of the Apes... Planet of the Apes, by the way, it's Earth.
You maniac!
Yes, except... Who was going to go see a schlocky prehistoric movie about a prehistoric guy running around? But if you call it Your Hunter from the Future, it's like, what the fuck does that even mean? And you look at that great poster, which has nothing to do with the movie, and it's Yor standing, you know, up with Kala at his legs,
like
very, very Star Wars-esque, with UFO lights coming down on him. None of that's in the fucking movie.
It looks like if Journey decided to do a metal album, that would be the cover of the record. And yeah, no, I mean, it's great, but I mean, you could have called the movie Yor the Hunter with that cover, and it would have been everything that the Italians ever wanted to get people into seats. That's all. All they had to do was call it "You're the Hunter." I mean, and there may have been a few people who read the graphic novel and would have known what was up, but I suspect the vast majority of people seeing this in 1983 had no clue it was adapted. So I don't understand why you give away the farm in the title.
Because the big hook of this movie is the science fiction of it, not the post-apocalypticness of it. Because at this point, you know, there were post-apocalyptic films; they were good, but it wasn't like people were like, I want another post-apocalyptic movie. And as a post-apocalyptic movie, it doesn't have, we'd never see buildings. We don't see, you know, dilapidated airports, you know, that are hundreds or maybe thousands of years old. It's not at all like Thundar the Barbarian, which, by the way, is very similar to Your Hunter from the Future in certain respects. Have you ever seen the cartoon Thundar the Barbarian?
Yes. Yeah.
In the year 1993, a rogue planet flies between Earth and the moon. I fucking love Thundar the Barbarian. And this is very much Thundar the Barbarian, except it's Your Hunter from the Future. But it doesn't have those elements of, you know, sneaking in through subway systems or seeing overgrown cities. The cities are gone. This is so long in the future that, you know, animals have mutated. You know, people are still around.
Triceratops eat meat now?
Yeah, apparently.
Madness. Mummies live in caves. Men have women out the yin yang because of the law, and they are handed giant chunks of, I don't know what that was that they handed him, but it was the
Triceratops.
No, but I mean, what they actually used, because it looked like a real cut of meat that came from an actual, it looked like the ribs that they put on the Flintstone car at the end of every episode to tip it over. Like, whatever animal they actually got that from, it is probably extinct now. Is probably very extinct now, but it was like, so men get handed these enormous, like, pillow-sized cuts of meat. They can have as many women as they want until one of them dies, and then they suddenly become monogamous randomly, and then you reach the shiny metal part of the movie, where the movie, for me, really became, it went from being, you know, like, schlock that was like, okay, this is enjoyable, to like, okay, no, this is really cool, is when it goes full Star Wars. When it, literally, you have the bad guy walking around in Palpatine's cloak.
And he's got all these Darth Vader robots running around.
Yes. In fact, yes, his henchmen, their helmets could not be more clearly Darth Vader helmets. They have a different mask over the front, but it's like, yeah, I've seen this before. I know where you got this. Can we talk a little bit about Overlord for a second?
Yeah, let's talk about Overlord.
Overlord. First of all, Bravo on the creative name for your bad guy, Overlord.
Sure.
Should have just called him Bad Guy. Bad Guy. Yeah,
one of the other movies we were going to talk about that we ended up having to scrap for this month had a character named Overdog.
Overdog. Wow.
And we replaced this at the last minute.
Maximum Overdog.
Yeah, we were going to talk Space Hunter, Adventures in the Forbidden Zone.
Yeah, which we still can. That movie still exists.
And it's a legitimately good movie. But we'll talk. Here's your point to take a drink, because that's one we're going to talk about in the future. We were actually going to talk about it this week. But when Brian discovered Your Hunter from the Future was a thing, this became a priority.
This movie is so weird, and I shouldn't like it at all. I recognize that I shouldn't enjoy this movie, but for God's sake, like...
You can't help but fall madly in love with this thing.
From the opening song to the point where you realize that this takes place in the future, even though the title should have probably called
Yours
you
World.
And then we meet
not
Overlord.
Available at our karaoke joint, by the way.
No, it's I've not. Checked. We've looked. So Overlord's plan to take over the world. What's the way to put it? Makes no goddamn sense.
Not a lick.
Whatsoever.
Not a lick.
It is banana marbles. Like, I tried, I was like, wait, maybe it's just that I've been blinded by pterodactyl hang gliders and paper mache triceratops. Maybe it's just that I'm not paying attention.
Cave mummies.
Maybe it's like a Johnny Quest episode throughout this whole fucking movie.
It's really kind of amazing.
So it's like, maybe I just wasn't paying attention. So I actually rewound it and I was like, no, I'm gonna listen really hard this time. He's got this pseudo Orwellian plan. He wants to achieve harmony by making all people conform to one belief system. So it's like, okay, I can kind of, it's a little, not even Orwellian really, more like Aldous Huxley. It's like, we're going to go Brave New World with this. Okay, fine. But he wants to, the way he's going to do that is he's going to use your semen to create biologically enhanced androids. And my question to you is, did you know you could, as a man, get a robot pregnant? Because I didn't know that. I thought that was the whole point of having a sex bot, is that there was no chance of
getting... getting a robot pregnant.
Well, no, but he wants to...
But your hunter... If anyone could get a robot pregnant, it would be the man as manly as your hunter from the future.
This is... I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not casting aspersions on the manliness of your hunter from the future.
Come on, Red Brown, baby. Red Brown.
I am calling into question how you are going to use biological material... You're going to use semen... to create enhanced androids. I'm like, maybe you just have a better understanding of science, Overlord, than I do, because you're from the future, but to me, that sounds bazonkers. Like, I don't understand
how it's
supposed to work.
The general impression that I got from that element was the fact that Yor was biologically a perfect specimen who then survived out in the world and became this super badass, and clearly he was genetically superior enough to go ahead and use as the base model for these androids. Now, the thing is android's a weird word. Android, depending on which science fiction you're talking about, android can mean a robot that looks human, or it can mean a biological entity that is robotically controlled, that has like a computer for a brain. That essentially the Vision is an android, but the Vision is made up of biological material. He's not made of metal. So the word, and also I think that the issues like this probably come up from the truncation of the story as well as the translation of the story, because it might make more sense in Italian. I'm not counting on it.
Wait. I'm going to stop
you right
there.
I'm not counting on it.
At what point in our shared viewing history has anything in Italian made more sense because it was in Italian and subtitled versus something that's not in Italian and dubbed?
I'm not saying that it's dubbing versus subtitling. It could be that, but that maybe in the original Italian, Android made more sense.
I like the idea that there is a world where if we spoke Italian, all of these really awful movies that we love might actually make a lot of sense.
Although we'd probably realize how bad the acting is.
But yeah. That's when we would realize how bad the acting is from the greats like Michael Sapkew and Trash.
Well, yeah, but You brought trash.
Oh, I did.
God damn it.
This is a trashy movie. I thought I'd bring up Trash.
Trash
from 1990 Bronx Warriors.
Oh, Trash. Which was like our second episode we ever did?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love that
Italian stuff keeps coming up for us, I feel.
Well, because Italians made the best knockoffs.
Why didn't we get Italy to sponsor our show? Like, do you have a phone number for Italy? Can I just call them?
I have a phone number to someone in Italy, but...
Can we get that sponsorship in 30 minutes or less? Because that would be fantastic.
They didn't invent pizza either. Don't do that.
That's true. But I'm gonna use it anyway. I mean, they didn't invent anything that they're knocking off. That's kind of what's great about them.
Yeah, no, the thing is that's what's so great about this particular era is, like, they really... Their copyright laws are really strange. The famous story about how Zombie happened, Fulci's Zombie, which is actually called Zombie 2, because the original Zombie was which movie?
The original Zombie was Dawn of the Dead.
And they had the license in Italy to the name and to the title. And so Zombie 2, aka Zombie, was marketed as a sequel to Dawn of the Dead.
I love that. I love that story where it's like you can't even follow. Like, and then there was like Zombie 3, Zombie 4, Zombie 5, and it's like none of these are actually sequels to anything because the original Zombie is Dawn of the Dead, and you just was just like, well, we can sell more tickets if people think this is a sequel to Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
I love the no shame. Much like us.
The Italians were Italians made that terrible Patrick 2 sequel.
Patrick Vivancora.
Yes.
Long live Patrick. Apparently, long live Patrick way outside the bounds of copyright law.
And taste. That movie is no bueno. That movie's no bueno at all. Yeah, but so this is one of those weird things where it's a weird... Now, this wasn't, this is, oddly enough, one of the few not really knockoff movies. And that's what's kind of cool about it is they were stealing little bits and pieces of inspiration, but everyone was doing that. For fuck's sake, Corman was doing that.
How dare you?
Oh,
no, he was.
Yeah,
he was.
No, he was doing it bad. And this is that. This is, hey, let's borrow from some of the imagery that people are using that everyone's identifying with and make this movie. But they made a wholly original movie out of it. Like, it isn't like After the Fall of New York, which we talked about last week, which was just Escape from New York all over again. It was something all its own. And this movie is just, it's fresh. It's cool. It's weird poppy Euro synth soundtrack is really awesome.
It really fucking is. Like, I'm not kidding. I really do want this soundtrack on vinyl as soon as possible because it's so energetic. It's so much fun. It kind of sounds like if somebody took Tangerine Dream and set it on top of a unbalanced washer, like an unbalanced clothes washer. Like that's kind of what it sounds like. But it's so fucking good. It just gets you pumped. Even by the end of the movie, you're like, I can't believe I wasted my time on that. That theme song comes up and you're like, I fucking love this.
He's the man.
So good.
And I love that those are the lyrics.
Like, that's it. Like, we want you to write a song about
actually, there's actually a whole song that explains the movie.
It's not the future, but it totally is.
Yeah, but the refrain is yours world, he's the man.
That's everything you need to know.
And he is the man.
It's yours world, we're just living in it. He's the man, y'all. And also, I love the fact that they apparently saved all their money. All of it for that final action sequence. Because before, like, the most grandiose thing we saw before the final sequence is, like, a paper mache triceratops or pterodactyl hang glider. Then, all of a sudden, they're in a hangar with, like, spaceships and lasers are being fired and there's a war going on and it's like, holy shit, you backloaded the hell out of this movie.
Yeah. And that actually reminds me of my favorite thing about the uncle character. He exists in the movie to point out to Yor the really cool thing that he needs to do in order to save the day. Like, every time, Yor has no idea. He's like, how are we going to get over to that thing to put this bomb there? And the uncle just points at the cable.
Hey, as if he's going, hey, dummy, Hey, dummy, right there. That's how you be a hero.
Yeah, you're supposed to be the protagonist. Fucking grab the goddamn cable.
Yes. Stop being such a Jack Burton and accidentally doing well. I'm going to show you exactly how to do this.
Yeah.
And grab the cable and swing over.
I love how Yor has apparently lived in the same valley with these guys forever, never met them, and this uncle is constantly explaining things to him. He's like, it's the hunter of the night.
Yeah. The uncle who has lived in, like, one cave his entire life knows everything about everyone who has ever existed.
Yeah, because it's that kind of a fucking movie.
The Uncle Exposition is here to tell you.
The Exposition.
That's the only reason. Oh, no, there's a second reason that character exists. To pull off one of the lamest effects in any movie like this we have ever seen, where Yor gets stranded. Oh no, the cable, I can't get it back, and I'm stuck over here. How will I ever get back across?
Oh.
And so the Uncle Old Exposition, gets up on this like a trapeze artist, flips over upside down, grabs Yor, and swings him back across. Except, no, that's not really accurate. His action figure flips over, swings out, grabs Yor's action figure, and both of them swing across.
To the theme song!
Yor's world, he's the man!
Yor's world!
And it's just like, wait, was this supposed to be heroic? I feel like you guys thought this was heroic. I feel like you thought this shot was going to just blow people's minds.
It does. It so does.
And it's just like, wait, why is your sister, like, doing a Barbie trapeze act in the middle of this action movie?
It's so good. It's so good.
I can't help but love it. Because, again, if you watch everything else that's going on around them in that scene, it's like, oh, you ran out of money. You ran out. Like, you did not budget
this.
You backloaded
it. You didn't do the finances right. And we're like, oh shit, we still have to do the trapeze shot.
You've got spaceships that then take off. You've got, like, robot insemination pods that you have to, like, put all the lights on. You got all these explosions going on, and what is clearly.
You got mirror rooms.
You got. Oh my god. Because we need to be reminded that Enter the Dragon exists, so here's a room full of mirrors, and my favorite part of that scene is that it is so fucking clear they're standing right next to each other, and it's like, which one's the real you? I'm like, oh my god. It's literally her right there. There is no disguising that. You don't have a good DP. It's pretty obvious that you're standing right next to each other.
And you know what? Then Conan the Destroyer comes out later and steals the same bit.
That's
technically speaking, Conan the Destroyer ripped off Yor, Hunter of the Future, ripping off Enter the Dragon.
Yor, Hunter of the Future.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Yeah, and do it a lot so this movie makes sense. Like, put it all up in your pipe and smoke it a lot so that this movie makes sense. And
this movie makes sense. It's just silly and wonderfully silly.
It doesn't at all, but.
No,
somehow,
Overlord's plot doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
There's a lot about the plot that doesn't make a lot of sense. But at the end of the day, at the end of the movie, it's so blissfully ignorant of how bad it is that it's kind of charming. Like, it doesn't understand why what it's doing isn't, like...
Like where it spontaneously generates a narrator?
Yes. It's like, what? Huh?
Where did
Who
the narrator... There was
Hello?
No narration in
God?
This film.
Is that you, God? It's me, Yor, Hunter from the Future. Yeah, and it's just like, there's something so charming about just like going for it. And I tell you what, I really want to read this graphic novel now. I really want to track down... it's called Henga el Cazador, which I'm sure in Italian means... Don't fucking tell people it's the future. That's a surprise. But I really want to read this graphic.
It might be Yor, Hunter from the Future.
It might
be. Really disappointed.
If it does,
I will
be.
In fact, go back and listen to this episode again and take a shot every time we say the phrase, Yor, Hunter from the Future.
No.
We just enjoy saying, Yor, Hunter from the Future.
Ladies and gentlemen, Yor, Hunter from the Future. It sounds. It really does sound like
starting Hunter from the Future.
Like Michael Buffer's gonna get out there and be like, "Let's get ready to kill a paper mache dinosaur." Yor, Hunter from the Future. This is a really fun movie. This is the kind of film that, like, we don't have to analyze for a lot of high art. There's not a lot of mastery going on here. It's just so much fucking fun.
And yet, you know what? And let's talk about some of the cool elements, though.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about the
music.
A lot of fun. The cinematography in this at times is really good. There's some really cool shots in here. One of my favorite shots is when Yor is swinging around his axe and hits a torch that just breaks apart into the camera. and it looks really fucking cool. And there's a couple of shots like that where, you know, it just looks slick, and they make them wandering around the fucking woods look kind of epic at times. Sometimes it looks like they're wandering around the woods, but but then again,
so did the Lord of the Rings trilogy at times.
It looks so sweeping and epic. They built this really cool island village that one of the prehistoric tribes lives at that looks really neat. And there's some really cool stuff. And I love how it doles out the story very slowly. And it's an evolution of story where the story keeps changing. Like I said, every act is ostensibly a different type of film.
Yeah.
And you're always with it. And you're not like, when the fuck did this become this? It was, you are right there with it when it shifts. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, that's fucking cool. And like the cave mummy section is fucking cool. And it becomes kind of very fantasy and very epic. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes a science fiction movie. And you're like, what the fuck? And you're like, oh, okay, I get this. This is weird and cool and very of its time, and it's just, it's a neatly put together movie, and it's just so much fun.
And I think that shot that you're referring to, I really do like, where he smashes the torch. It's like a Ronnie James Dio video is about to start up all of a sudden.
Yes,
and that's never a bad thing. You know, I think overall, this movie has a very Saturday morning feel to it.
Oh yeah,
and I think that on a certain level, we will never grow out of. There was something so magical and so innocent and dazzling about Saturday morning. Like, if you really start thinking about some of the shows that we used to watch on Saturday morning, yeah, maybe not the greatest, but, you know, in that moment of freedom where you woke up and you had the whole day in front of you and there was so much optimism and so much just innocent joy, like, stuff like this, stuff like your Hunter from the Future was exactly the kind of sugar-coated entertainment, exactly the type of grand spectacle and escapism that, you know, we as kids were like, yes, this is what we latch onto, other worlds and big heroes. And
I mean, this Yor is essentially the archetype of the Edgar Rice Burroughs, you know, hero. Mm-hmm. You know, he's John Carpenter meets Tarzan. He's John Carpenter gets left, not John Carpenter, oh my God, John Carter.
Yeah, there you
meets,
go.
Yeah,
it's a little bit of John Carpenter
doing too many movies.
John Carpenter's Cave Mummies is a movie that he would have filmed, I think, after 95.
He would have shot that in 2004. Cave Mummies,
and then Cave Mummies Los Muertos would have been the sequel.
Yeah, no, John Carter of Mars meets Tarzan is ostensibly what this fucking movie is.
Yeah.
Like it feels like an Edgar Rice Burroughs movie. In fact, I would hazard a guess that that's probably the prime inspiration of this. As much as they're ripping off like visuals of Star Wars, this movie doesn't feel like Star Wars. This movie feels like an Edgar Rice Burroughs story.
It feels like if you put Frank Frazetta in charge of Planet of the Apes. They would have been like, no, fuck the apes, because man is the only thing that matters.
Yes.
And we're going to tell that story with muscles and loincloths and swords and scantily clad women.
I hadn't thought
women.
About it, but this is Frazetta as fuck.
This is Frazetta as fuck. That should be a thing.
Because the girls we've been talking about, they're all Frazetta girls.
Yeah.
And your Reb Brown is fucking pure Rosetta in this movie. Frazetta, fuck, I can't believe that thought hadn't dawned on me. Yeah, this movie is Edgar Rice Burroughs by way of Frazetta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just...
And if that doesn't make you want to watch this fucking movie, you should not be listening to this fucking podcast. Because, dear God, that is your type of movie.
And every once in a while, you know, fuck it. I like to have my id pleased. I like a little id tickling going on. And that's definitely what's happening in Your Hunter from the Future. It's tickling some ids, and it's doing it well. And I don't know. Like, there's a lot wrong with this movie, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it is blissfully fun, and it really has no idea. It you can't even hate on it so much because it doesn't know it's bad.
It has a childlike innocence about itself.
It really
because
does.
When it's bad, it's bad because of production value. It's not bad for reasons of storytelling. It's not bad for reasons of people not giving a shit. It's bad for production value at times. And that is kind of the most enjoyable kind of B movie to watch. Like, where it's like, look, we're trying to make a good movie. We just don't have all the resources, but we're giving it a go. And so you can laugh at it ironically while still loving it legitimately. And that's what Yore is for me. It's just the things that work about Yore work so well that I forgive the things that really don't work, like the paper mache monsters and the goofiness of certain ideas.
But it's really like,
but if you don't stand up and fucking cheer when the pterodactyl scene happens, you've lost touch with your inner child. It's such an amazing moment.
I love that it does that thing where it does swing for the fences. It's like, yeah, we were making a sword and sandal swashbuckler, but now it's a giant sci-fi battle. Like, the ambition, the balls on the production to be like, okay, guys, let's be restrained with the budget all the way to the final act where we just let loose on the audience something that they did not see coming if they didn't hear the title.
And you do actually have to forgive the fact that these prehistoric people understand how to use laser blasters. So,
well, that is true.
It's just like, oh, this button. I get it.
Thank God that old man is here to explain to us how these blasters work, even though he's lived in a cave his whole life. And what the fuck, guys? What the fuck? But, I mean, just look at the poster alone. I want this poster so badly because this poster is...
It's a glorious poster.
It's just a man with an axe shouting at UFOs. A man and an axe and a loincloth and a very Frazetta pose, a woman lying at his feet.
Yeah.
Screaming at UFOs.
Although that was, while it's very Frazetta, that was very Star Wars as well. All the early Star Wars posters had those elements in it.
Yeah.
That they were stealing from Frazetta.
Yeah. And I swear to God, I'm looking at the poster now. It just dawned on me that the spaceships kind of look like E.T.'s mothership.
Yes. Is this what year was this movie released?
1983.
What year did E.T. come out?
1982.
Yes.
Yeah. So you can track it through the years. It's like 81, we get Road Warrior. 82, we get Conan. And 83, we get Yore, Hunter from the Future.
Yore's worth.
Probably going to sing that 100 more times. Can't say enough about this movie. It is one that I don't care if you love it. I don't care if you hate it. You need to put it in your eyeballs. You need to sit down and put this movie directly into your ocular cavities because it's indescribable. We've tried for an hour to try and describe this movie, but I don't think we've really done it justice because you just need to see it.
It is something that is wholly its own.
It must be
it's
beheld.
It's wholly its own.
Witness it! Witness it! Your Hunter from the Future, this week's pick on Junk Food Cinema.
He is from a future world, trapped in another time. You're the Hunter from the Future.
Which, of course, brings us to the junk food pairing. And this week, stick with me on this, I went with Fruity Pebbles. Yeah, I know. The cereal Fruity Pebbles, along with its chocolatey counterpart Cocoa Pebbles, used the Flintstones as their spokes characters. Now, the Flintstones was a cartoon that also presented a past in which humans and dinosaurs coexisted, and, like the story of Yore, we know now that this representation of the past is a lie! Also, there is a quality to Yore that makes me pine for those bygone days when I would pour ample amounts of sugary cereal into a bowl and spend my Saturday morning staring happily at equally nutritionally devoid flights of fantasy like Yore, Hunter from the Future. That is why Fruity Pebbles is my junk food pairing for Yore, Hunter from the Future. You know, have I mentioned he's from the future?
You know, this is the part of the episode where I typically come in and say, really? You didn't think of this? And that's so much better than what I had.
Yay!
It's just so much. It's like, no, that Fruity Pebbles is perfect. Everything about it. I just kind of was thinking Go-Gurt. It's yogurt of the future. But fucking Fruity Pebbles really ties into what this thing is.
I think Fruity Pebbles is maybe more apt, but now I just want to see a movie called Go-Gurt, yogurt of the future. Gog, yog of the future. Make it happen, Hollywood. We're counting on you. That's going to do it for this week's show. I hope you have enjoyed. I know I have enjoyed talking about your Hunter from the Future.
You're thinking about Go-Gurt again.
I'm thinking about pouring Go-Gurt onto my Fruity Pebbles and then saying your Hunter from the Future like 12 more times.
Yours, but he's the man.
Oh my God, that song. It's like, I'm sorry, guys, listening. That's been in this episode like 20 times.
You know what?
While we've been sitting here, I've been thinking, I'm going to insert that song like 20 times into this episode. So just
deal
with that.
Why don't we close out the episode with the whole fucking song?
Oh, we're going to close the episode. We have time. We can close the whole episode. We can close the episode with a whole song. So enjoy that in just a second. In the meantime, I want to remind you that this show is available on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. You can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema or like us on Facebook, facebook.com/JunkFoodCinema. Cargo, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitter at MassaWyrm. That's MassaWyrm. And on Facebook at facebook.com/MassaWyrm.
Groovy. You can find me on Twitter at BryGuySalisbury or my Facebook page, facebook.com/BryanSalisburyCritic. You can also find me at oneofus.net, my home away from home. Lots of geek podcasts and blogs for every nerdy taste. So please check that out and do everything. Like, buy DVDs, buy the rental from Amazon Prime, buy the poster, get absorbed by this movie. No, I'm not Swedish. I'm just doing a portmanteau. Absolutely great. This has been fun. And I'm going to end this episode by reminding you that a generous man does what his heart commands. So, you know, if your heart is commanding you to, go buy some fucking Go-Gurt.
The yogurt of the future. Yeah! Yeah.